MacCast, Sunday, November 17th, 2019. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Glad to be back here with you for another week of Mac and Apple news and information. Hopefully you are having a great, wonderful week. I myself, I'm feeling a little bit like I might be getting under the weather, so we might cut this one a little bit shorter than normal, but we still have a lot of good things to get into, so I don't want to waste a lot of time. We're going to get into things like updates on Apple's rumored AR headset, going to talk about next series Apple Watch development. Oh, and by the way, we do have a brand new machine that came out this past week. Yeah, we're going to, of course, dive in to the new 16-inch MacBook Pro. I'm going to tell you how excited I am about that machine. We've got some changes to Apple TV Plus and the org chart. The folks running that division are getting shifted around a little bit and things are changing. We'll talk about that. The Stanford Apple Watch heart rate studies are out, so we'll get into some of the information that came out surrounding that, and also talk about the new research app that Apple just launched so you can participate maybe in some future studies. And then there is a new firmware update for the AirPod Pro, and that will probably round out most of the show. I also want to talk to you about some questions many of you had regarding purchasing a new MacBook Pro and items that you might want to consider. So we'll get into all of that in just a moment. But before we get started, I do want to take a second and thank a show sponsor, and that is Smile. Although I want to talk to you today about Text Expander. If you've listened to the show for a while now, you know that I'm a huge fan of Text Expander. I use it every day. It helps me type out the things that I commonly type quickly and easily because I can turn those common things into snippets, and then I have those available everywhere. It doesn't matter what app I'm in. Basically, your time is too valuable. Life is too short to be constantly retyping the same thing over and over again. You take that, you throw it into a snippet, and you have it available, and it saves you time and energy. Companies use Text Expander for Teams for their customer support. This is another great application for Text Expander. You can get all of your communication to be consistent and accurate by using snippets. And with Text Expander for Teams, you can share those throughout your organization. So you can use them in reports, for support emails, anywhere that you need that constant and consistent communication. And best of all, Text Expander is available for macOS, for iPhone, for iPad, also available on Windows and Chrome, so you can use it across all of your devices and platforms. And plus, listeners of this show can get 20% off their first year of Text Expander. Just visit textexpander.com/podcast to learn more. That's textexpander.com/podcast to learn more and save 20% on your first year. And a big thank you to Smile for their continued support of the MacCast. We've talked quite a bit here on the MacCast about the fact that Apple is working on a rumored augmented reality headset, AR glasses, maybe a VR headset. I believe we even talked last episode about the fact that it sounds like they might be trying to partner with other companies to make that come to fruition as soon as 2020. At least that's what Ming-Chi Kuo thinks. Well, this week we got a little bit of counter information to that. A website called The Information claims that Apple had a briefing on their campus to a large group of employees on their plans to release an AR headset by 2022 and a more sophisticated set of AR glasses maybe sometime in 2023. The information was reportedly shared by Apple's VP of AR and VR development, Mike Rockwell, at an event at the Steve Jobs Theater for employees. Employees attending that meeting did have to have their iPhones applied with tamper-proof stickers with unique QR codes that blocked the cameras. So Apple was trying to not get information leaking out. Despite that, we did hear that the presentation given included videos and explanations, also updates from other teams involved in the projects, and a discussion of the thermal architecture of the headsets by the executives. Another interesting thing discussed by the executives was the fact that they think that these types of devices will eventually replace smartphones roughly within the next decade. So not going to happen overnight, but eventually we'll be moving away from having something in our pocket, probably to more something that we're wearing with a display that is somehow going directly into our eyeballs. I think this is a logical next step. Is it going to be glasses? Is that going to be the ultimate technology we land on? I don't think so. I think that's going to be a bridging technology, but I do think we're going to see more and more of this kind of stuff surfacing in the marketplace. Apple is keenly aware that this does cause some issues in the social realm of these types of devices, something that Google learned firsthand with Google Glass. They did even talk about that in this meeting, mentioning features like darkening the lenses when the AR features are active to let the outside world know that the wearer is distracted. So you would have some sort of visual indication that somebody might be looking at information through the AR display. As far as when this will come out and having it ready, they did comment that they will start to coordinate with third-party developers sometime in about 2021 to ensure that there are apps available at the time of launch. Now, all of this doesn't mean that Apple is going to stop all AR tech and development from being released before 2022. As a matter of fact, Mark Gurman claims that Apple is working on a range of augmented and virtual reality devices. He says that newer sensor technology will actually debut in a new iPad Pro as soon as in the first half of 2020. This would feature two camera sensors and a 3D system that would allow people to create three-dimensional reconstructions of rooms, objects, and people. He says that the same technology will hit iPhones in 2020 as well, and this is sounding like the rumored time-of-flight technology that we've heard about over the past year. So there's going to be augmented reality technology being developed and continued to be pushed forward by Apple, and they're going to use this technology eventually to culminate in something like the AR headset or a set of AR glasses that it's sounding like now might hit the retail space sometime in 2022 or 2023. Apple Watch Series 6 development is underway, according to Ming-Chi Kuo. He says that Apple is working on bringing faster wireless connectivity, better performance, and more water resistance to the next generation of the Apple Watch. He also thinks that Apple could employ liquid crystal polymer, or LCP, technology for the interconnects on the motherboard and also use it for the antenna to achieve their desired results. LCP is a low-cost, organic, flexible substrate that's designed and has unique electrical properties. It also has very low resistance and behaves consistently across the entire radio frequency band, making it a good option for 5G technology. So it could be the first Apple Watch with 5G. Also, it could be the first version of the Apple Watch to move to and adopt Wi-Fi 6 technology, just like the iPhone. We know the Apple Watch has used an OLED display since the beginning, and now with this version, it might be time for a switch as well. A technology we know that Apple has been looking into for a while and considering for their displays is micro-LED technology, and the belief is Apple Watch Series 6 could be the first to feature that. Oftentimes, Apple brings new display technologies to Apple Watch first. That's because of manufacturing costs. Makes it a little bit easier to build a small display first and then scale up to larger sizes. So I would imagine that could happen. The other thing that we've been hearing about with Apple Watch is a possibility for sleep tracking. It's something that Apple has been exploring for a while, or has been rumored to be exploring. The big issue here, of course, is going to be battery life and the ability for a wearer to actually wear an Apple Watch overnight. There's been some different proposed solutions, things like maybe waking up and charging first thing in the morning, but we know that wouldn't ultimately be very convenient. So maybe between the micro LED technology, some of the other technologies that Apple's been working on, and this liquid crystal polymer stuff, this might be the first Apple Watch to have an overnight battery life. So that's the latest that we know about Series 6. I'm sure we'll get more as time moves on and we get closer to a release sometime later next year. Apple did release a new MacBook Pro this week, although there was no special event, just as we thought might happen since it was getting a little bit late. Apple quietly, or maybe not so quietly if the press is involved, rolled out the 16-inch MacBook Pro. I woke up the other morning and was super excited to see this in my Twitter feed and also on Apple's website. The new device has, as predicted, a larger 16-inch display with slimmer bezels. It has a resolution of 3072 by 1920 at 226 pixels per inch. The big news, though, is the upgraded keyboard. It has what Apple is calling a new Magic Keyboard for MacBook Pro with an all-new scissor mechanism. So not the same scissor mechanism they've had in prior generations. This is an updated one for the new MacBook Pro, although the iFixit teardown says it pretty much matches the design that is in the Magic Keyboard with a little few enhancements. Another big thing about the keyboard is there is now a physical escape key versus the virtual one in the touch bar, and you also get a separate touch ID sensor, although the touch bar still is in there, but it has been moved further away from the physical keyboard to avoid accidental touches, which was one of the complaints of the prior generation. Sticking with the keyboard for a second, Apple also included an inverted T-arrow key arrangement for the arrow keys, or I guess we should say brought that back as well. And it's being noted by early reviewers that the keyboard is great. Apple was able to update the amount of movement from just 0.5 millimeters in the old butterfly design to a full millimeter in this design, and the benefits seem to be paying off. Reviewers like John Gruber also noted that there's about a half a millimeter more space between the keys, so really, this is the Pro keyboard that everybody wanted. Super excited about it. It sounds like it's awesome. They also did put some enhancements in to make sure that you have stability all the way across the keys. So it sounds like it's the best balance between both designs and hopefully won't have the kinds of problems that plagued the old butterfly keyboard in the past, although only time will tell on that one. Apple does seem to be pretty confident about it, though, because the 16-inch MacBook Pro is not part of Apple's keyboard replacement program. As far as the tech specs go, it has the latest Intel Core i7 and i9 processors in 6-core and 8-core configurations. These offer a better thermal profile, meaning that the new machines should have longer sustained CPU and GPU performance at the maximum clock speeds, something else that was a complaint about the prior generation. You can get them configured with up to 64 gigabytes of RAM and up to 8 terabytes of storage. And I was happy to see that 512 gigabytes is now standard on the base model, which I think is the bare minimum that you can have these days, or you would need these days, especially in a pro machine. As far as the graphics go, you can have them configured with up to an AMD Radeon Pro 5000M graphics card, And there is a new upgraded 6-speaker audio system, which again, early reviewers say sounds amazing. So maybe some of the audio technology that they've built into things like AirPod Pros and the HomePod, those are starting to pay off in other devices like the updated MacBook Pro. There's also some new microphones in there, and Apple claims that you should be able to record a podcast with just the built-in mics. I would say, maybe in a pinch, you could still do that with even the existing MacBooks, although it was never that great. We'll have to wait and see if there's a podcaster out there who gives this a try and ultimately what it sounds like. But Apple seems pretty confident in the new microphone technology as well. A couple of specs that unfortunately did not get updated in the new machine are the Wi-Fi and the FaceTime camera. It still has a 720p FaceTime camera, and the Wi-Fi is the older 802.11 AC technology and not the newer Wi-Fi 6 technology like the iPhone, which does feel a little bit odd, especially in a Pro machine. As far as how pricing goes, the new MacBook Pro 16-inch starts at $2,399 US. And if you go it all in for all of the maxed out configuration, the highest CPU, the most storage at 8 terabytes, the most RAM at 64 gigabytes, and all the bells and whistles, that's going to run you just a little over $6,000 at US $6,099. Along with this release, Apple did discontinue the old 15-inch MacBook Pro. So if you want to pick one of those up, you're going to have to get it on clearance or on refurb. But I really think most pros are going to want to opt for the new one, especially at the configurations and pricing, which seems great to me. As far as if this means that Apple will switch the entire lineup to this new Magic Keyboard, I would say don't hold your breath, at least not yet. It's not looking like it's going to become the standard across all of Apple's notebooks overnight. Phil Schiller did say in an interview that Apple is continuing with both keyboard designs. I have a feeling for slimmer devices like the MacBook Air, they will continue to use the older butterfly design, which in all fairness did get a lot better with several of the refreshes and improvements Apple did over the past couple years. So like it or hate it, it's probably going to still stick around at least on some models, but at least you're going to have the option for this new keyboard. And it is worth noting that the 16-inch MacBook Pro is just slightly thicker than the prior generation 15-inch model, likely to accommodate for some of those new keyboard designs and the little bit of extra travel. And then kind of lastly in Mac news, we finally got an announcement of a release date from Apple on the Mac Pro and the Pro Display XDR. Well, at least a release month. And it's not going to be too surprising that it is December. They did not give us a hard date on when in December. I have a feeling it's going to be toward the middle or maybe the end. Apple's going to push that Mac Pro release date as far as they possibly can, as they often do. So if you've been waiting for that one, you have just a little bit longer to wait. I guess maybe you'll be lucky if you can get yours shipping sometime in the new year. But that's all the latest with Macintosh news. There was a small reorganization of the staff over at Apple's Worldwide Video Division. That's the division of Apple that takes care of Apple TV Plus content. Deadline reported that Kim Rosenfeld, Apple's head of current scripted programming and unscripted content, is stepping down and returning to producing for his own company, Half Full Productions. He's not going too far away from Apple, though. In fact, he already has a first look deal, so he will be producing content that Apple will get a chance to bid on and potentially pull into Apple TV+. Rosenfeld was the executive vice president of current programming at Sony before he was picked up by Apple early in the development of the Apple TV Plus service. Matt Chernis, who serves as the head of scripted development for Apple TV Plus, will take over responsibilities for the scripted series. Also, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that Apple is in talks to sign an exclusive production deal with former HBO CEO Richard Pepler. Under the agreement, his new company, RLP & Company, would exclusively produce content for Apple TV+. So Apple is getting a pretty big heavy hitter, potentially. This deal's not signed. They're just in talks right now, but it's looking like it will move forward. And Apple seems to be aggressively looking to ramp up their programming for Apple TV+, which is a good thing because early reviews of Apple TV+, while good, one of the big complaints that we keep hearing is folks saying, hey, there's not enough content. We know Apple has a larger slate of shows that they're planning to try to roll out at least one new show or movie a month. But if they want to catch up to the likes of somebody like Netflix or Amazon, which there's really no evidence right now that that's what they're trying to do, but if they want to at least get more in the ballgame, more content is going to be key. And these kinds of deals are going to be important in making that happen. So it's good to see that this is moving forward. Something else related to Apple TV that I keep hoping will happen, we keep hearing about, and we heard more about this week, is a potential bundle. Bloomberg says that Apple is considering a subscription media bundle. The hang-up right now is that they would need to renegotiate with a couple of their publishers, specifically music publishers and news publishers in the News Plus service, many of whom are not currently happy with the results nor the amount of money that they're making, which could make doing a deal a little bit more difficult. The bundle would bring together Apple News Plus, Apple TV Plus, and Apple Music under a single price. Right now, publishers on News Plus are currently split the revenue for the service with Apple 50-50, and then of that 50% cut, they kind of get a cut from the pool based on how many of their articles are actually being read and consumed by subscribers. So it's not really clear how that's working out. Of course, from Apple's side, bundling the services together would potentially bring more subscribers to News Plus and therefore more revenue. Same thing potentially on the music side, but it's looking like that's currently a little bit of a hard sell, and Apple does have some holdouts. But assuming they can get it all sorted out, Apple could roll out a new bundle as early as next year, so you would have a single price for News, Apple TV, and Apple Music. I would like to see that. I'm curious what the price point might end up being. Individually, I think you're looking at about, what, $25 for those services, $10 for News Plus, $10 for Apple Music, and $4.99 for Apple TV. So if they were able to bring that in at about $20 a month, I think that would be a pretty good deal, and you'd likely have a lot of people sign up for that. I ultimately would like to see Apple do a bundle really for everything, though, including Apple Arcade Plus and iCloud storage. If they could bundle all of that under one single price and give everybody a deal, that is the kind of service that I would want. I've been calling it Apple Prime, sort of like Amazon Prime, where everything is included. And I'm hoping that's something they're considering as well. But maybe sometime next year, we'll actually get an Apple services bundle. Stanford this week published the results of the Apple Watch heart rate study. The full study's results were published in the New England Journal of Medicine. We now know that over 400,000 people participated in the study. These are folks who wore an Apple Watch over a period of 8 months. Of all the participants, about 2,000 of them received a notification from their Apple Watch of irregular heartbeat. And of those, 84% of those detections that were made by the Apple Watch were confirmed to be actual atrial fibrillation. The study also seemed to confirm the theory that atrial fibrillation is common or more common among older people. And although the report says further study is needed, they did say that it indicates that this kind of passive monitoring can be effective in detecting irregular heart rhythms. And while this heart rate study has ended, you can have the opportunity to participate in another one, or possibly a women's health study or a hearing study. That's because this past week, Apple launched its research app on the App Store. Through it, participants in the U.S. can sign up for a heart and movement study, a women's health study, or a hearing study. All of the signups happen inside a single application, making it easy to apply. And after enrolling, participants use their iPhone or Apple Watch to contribute to movement, heart rate, and noise level studies using data captured from those devices through everyday activities. When you sign up, the app explains also how your data will be used and allows you to control the type of data that is shared with each study, and all of the data is kept private. They also point out the fact that they do not sell the data to any third parties. So I actually took an opportunity to sign up for one of these studies, actually the hearing study. And I have to tell you, it was very straightforward. It was very clear how your data was going to be collected and used. It was super simple to sign up, and it even had some interesting information, like when you went in, at least for the hearing study, to sign up, and it talked about some of the risks. One of the risks it listed was fatigue from filling out too many study forms. And although I have to say I haven't had to fill out too many forms, they all have been really quick, and just answering a couple little questions here and there, and it has been really easy. And it's pretty cool that you can kind of get a lot of people to participate through an app like this. And that's sort of the idea behind this program, is that if you make participation easy, you're going to get more participants. And the more participants you have in your study, the more accurate your results can be. So I'm going to continue on with the hearing study. I'll continue to share my experiences with you as I have them. But I have to say, signing up was great. And so I would encourage anyone who would like to participate to go check out the research app, Apple's research app, on the App Store. And then finally, in the news for this week, Apple did release a firmware update for their AirPods Pro. Apple updated the firmware from 2B584 to 2B588. Unfortunately, there's no notes on exactly what the update does, but I would imagine it has some bug fixes and possibly some fixes to address connectivity issues. The firmware update will be installed automatically when you connect your AirPods Pro to your iPhone or your iPad. You can check which version of the firmware you have by opening up the Settings app on your device, tapping on General, tapping on About, and with the AirPods Pro connected to your device, scroll down and you should see an AirPods Pro section. Tap on that, and then under the firmware number, you should see the firmware version. And again, you're looking for 2B588. Now, it's important to note that there is no way to force an update. You do have to just simply connect your AirPods to your device. Make sure your AirPods are then in their charging case. Make sure the charging case is on your charger and that your device is within range of the AirPods. Do all of that and the firmware update should happen automatically. And so if you don't have it, that's how you can kind of get it to go. But with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank another show sponsor, and that is Linode. Hey, if you're looking for great hosting, I encourage you to give Linode a look. Linode allows you to instantly deploy and manage an SSD server in their Linode cloud. You can get a server up and running literally in seconds with your choice of Linux distribution, resources, and your choice of 10 different locations. Best of all, they're giving all new MacCast customers a $20 credit when you sign up. I had built out a Linode for a Minecraft server. Gaming servers is one of the applications that they offer one-click installs for, so it was super easy to set up. You can also get one-click installs for Arc, Terraria, and more. Also, if you want to set up a WordPress site, a Drupal site, maybe a GitLab version control repo, or OpenVPN, they have one-click installs for those as well. Plus, they have a whole bunch of distributions of Linux. If it runs on Linux, it runs on Linode, and most distributions are available out of the box, but you certainly can build your own custom image and use that if you'd like to as well. All of the Linode servers feature native SSD storage, a 40 gigabit network, and industry-leading processors, and you can pick from 10 worldwide data centers, including their newest one, which they just opened up in Toronto, Canada. Pricing is simple as well, with no surprise fees. Pay what you want with hourly billing across all of their plans and add-on services. You can get what you need starting with a simple $5 a month Linode plan, and you can upgrade all the way up to high-powered dedicated CPU plans. Their dashboard makes it easy to manage your Linode, and upgrading is also super easy. Plus, you can add on things like backups, large storage volumes, and load balancing to round out your server. And if you need support, they have great 24/7 live customer support and a large documentation library available if you get stuck. Visit linode.com/maccast to set up your first Linode and get a $20 credit when you use the promo code maccast2019. That's linode.com/maccast and use the promo code maccast2019. Big thank you to Linode for their support of the Maccast. Want to finish up the show this week with a conversation about the new 16-inch MacBook Pro. And I'm bringing this up because I had several of you email and ask me, hey, which MacBook Pro configuration should I get? What do you think the best bang for the buck is when you're buying the new 16-inch MacBook Pro? And that is a little bit of a tricky question. When you email me that, I have a hard time answering, especially without any additional information, because it's pretty hard to figure it out if you don't know what the use case is. And there's such a broad range of use cases for people who are considering a MacBook Pro purchase. So the answer is, it really depends on your needs. Some users are going to want to max out the storage because you just need a ton of onboard storage. You don't want to deal with external volumes, those sorts of things. I know other listeners and folks who are really all about the processor. If you're going to be doing really processor and graphics intensive things, you're going to want more RAM for your GPU. You're going to want more cores in your processor so you can process more things simultaneously. Now, that said, a lot of us, myself included, don't necessarily use multi-threaded applications. If you're just doing things like surfing the web, using Office applications, if you're doing programming like I do, you're not going to be doing a lot of multi-threading. Now, if you're having to compile and build big applications, that stuff might become more important. So these are all things to consider when you're looking at a new machine. What is your use case? How are you going to use it? Another thing is longevity. How long do you plan on having that machine before you do an upgrade? If you're the type of person that upgrades more frequently, you might be able to get by with something a little less specced out. If you need it to last a really long time, it's important to note you can't upgrade these things later, right? You're not going to be able to go in and add more RAM. You're not going to be able to put more internal storage in there. You can, of course, supplement with external devices, but that is probably not what you want necessarily with a notebook. So consider the configuration up front, how long you're going to have it. And so in that scenario, things like RAM and having more RAM might be a little bit more important to you. Now, the good news is, like I told you earlier, I think the base configurations for this year's lineup are pretty darn good. I would arguably say that they're some of the best that Apple has ever put out for the price versus the configuration. That starting model, a 2.6 gigahertz, 6-core Intel i7 processor. That's no slouch of a processor. You get 512 gigabytes of SSD storage. You get 16 gigs of RAM out of the box, and you get that AMD Radeon Pro 5300M graphics card, all starting at around US $2,400. So not an inexpensive laptop by any stretch of the imagination, but for a MacBook Pro, that is a nice, healthy configuration. So that's your first base model. If you want to jump to the $2,800 model, you get a 2.3 gigahertz 8-core processor. That's an i9, 1 terabyte of storage, and the 16 gigabytes of RAM. Plus, you get bumped up to that AMD Radeon Pro 5500M processor. So another nice configuration, and you're still considerably under $3,000. Now, I think as far as upgrades go, the most common upgrades most people are going to want to look into are going to be more storage and more RAM. 32 gigs of RAM, that's going to be an add-on of about $400, so not necessarily cheap. You are paying a little bit of Apple's premium prices there, but if longevity of that machine is something that's really important to you, I would say that would be something to consider, right? 16 gigabytes is pretty good for today. I think most people would be able to get by with that. Are you going to be able to get by with that 3 years from now, 4 years from now, 5 years from now? You might start to find it coming up a little bit short. So buying that more storage now, taking that hit today, might pay off for you longer in the future. And I think the same goes for storage, although I have a little bit of a hard time recommending storage if your budget is really tight, because maybe you want to jump up to a 2 terabyte SSD versus the 1 terabyte, but that's going to cost you a pretty penny. And with storage, you do have always the ability to add on external storage. And me personally, I don't find using USB hard drives too inconvenient, especially when they're bus powered. So I usually use that for adding on additional storage and keep my internal storage pretty lean and clean. And I found that 1 terabyte is more than adequate for my current needs. Now, again, if you're looking into longevity, remember, you can't upgrade that later, so you might consider that taking that storage hit up front and just paying now, as opposed to having to feel like you need to upgrade sooner than you want later. So as far as if you want to know what my ideal configuration is, now remember, again, everybody's needs are going to vary. I am not doing a lot of heavy photo processing. I'm not doing a lot of heavy video editing. I'm not a video podcaster. I do audio. And for audio, GarageBand works great with my current 2015 machine. So if I were to buy a new 16-inch MacBook Pro today, I'm doing web surfing. I'm doing a lot of note-taking, research. I am producing an audio podcast. I am doing web development and programming. So occasionally I have to fire up Photoshop or something like that, or Adobe XD, but those things are not processor intensive, especially when you're dealing with web images. I'm not usually dealing with big, large photos or anything like that. So for me, I could get by with the base processor. 6 cores is probably plenty. Again, I'm not using a lot of multi-threaded applications. If I was, I would consider jumping up to the 8-core processor, but sticking with the base model. And then for me, I value longevity. I typically have a machine anywhere from 3 to 5 years before I do an upgrade. I'm currently using a 2015 MacBook Pro. And honestly, as much as I want a new 16-inch MacBook Pro, I recognize that I don't necessarily need one at this point. So I'm not going to be upgrading. But if I were, I would start with that $2,399 base model and then add on 16 gigabytes of RAM, bringing it up to 32 gigabytes, and bump the 512 megabyte hard drive, or gigabyte hard drive rather, excuse me, 512 gigabyte hard drive to a 1 terabyte SSD. And the price for that configuration is just right at $2,999 US. So $3,000 for a laptop. Again, not the cheapest thing on the market, but man, that thing is going to be a great performer. And I think a machine that many of us would really like to have, myself included. Like I said, I've held restraint. I haven't jumped in and pulled the trigger on a new MacBook Pro yet. I don't think I will. I think I'm going to try and get this 2015 to eke out another couple years, and I think it will do so handily. But again, it does that because I got the highest level configuration at the time I bought it. And the reason for that was so that I could have it a bit longer than maybe some other people typically have a notebook. So again, these are all things to consider. I think I've hit all of the high points, but if I did miss something, I'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions. If you were to configure your perfect MacBook Pro today, what would it be? What would that configuration be, and why would you make those choices? I'd love to hear from you. If you want to send me an email, great. Even better yet, if you want to send me an audio comment, and we can share those on future episodes of the MacCast. So maccast@gmail.com is the place to send those. But with that, that is going to do it for the show for this week. Before I leave you, I do want to thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great applications by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, please send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number, 281-622-4269. 281-MAC-IM-9. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And if you'd like to follow me online between shows, you can find me on social media on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. But that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.